It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. All right, I made sure to hit the broadcast button, but I forgot to log into Calm. And since this is a live show, you can interact with everybody in News to Me at Calm. So just connect over to SDF. Then once you get there, type Calm, C-O-M, and then G for go to. Then type out a non-radio, all lowercase, all one word. Boom. And you will be magically transported to the cool Anon Radio Room with SMJ and RN and a whole bunch of other cool people. Jazzmaz, etc. So this is a news show, so let's get into some news. Of course, as always, we always start with
world news.
That is right. So away we go. Huh? No. My phone is in the other room. Did I miss something? Let me know when calm. Here we go. Let's go with the world news. So, there's a lot going on. French Parliament votes to return stolen artifacts to Benin and Senegal. Oh, greetings, Ratsu. So, French lawmakers on Tuesday unanimously voted to return prized artifacts to Benin and Senegal more than a century after they were looted by colonial forces and hauled back to Paris to be displayed in museums. The pieces include a royal throne and statues taken by the French army during a war in Benin, the then wealthy African kingdom of Dahomey, as well as a saber once wielded by a 19th century Muslim sheikh in what is today Senegal. After 49 MPs in the National Assembly, the lower house of parliament, voted Tuesday night in favor of the bill, with none voting against it, it will now head to the Senate. If approved, France will officially restore to Benin 26 items from the treasure of Behanzen, looted during the 1892 pillaging of the Palace of Abomey. They include the throne of King Glili, a centerpiece of the 70,000 odd African objects, held at the Quai Branly Jacques Chirac Museum in Paris. Senegal will get a sword and scabbard said to have belonged to Omar Sido Tall, an important 19th century military and religious figure in West Africa. The pieces are officially held by the Army Museum in Paris, but are on a long-term loan to Dakar, where they have been exhibited since last November. Former Cultural Minister Frank Reister said that the return of the artifacts was part of a strengthened desire for cooperation with the two Francophone Western African countries. Listening live is the fun part of an on radio, but there's also archives, so tune in if you missed a show. We're going to keep on rolling. Sometimes I look at Calm and I get distracted. Sorry about that. But there's just so much news, we're just going to forget. Let's keep on happening. So this is from Reuters. Breaking news. Evergrande's debt scares creditors into submission. So this is from China Evergrande, and from Hong Kong. China's second largest developer, Evergrande, has frightened creditors owed nearly $15 billion into converting obligations into unlisted shares. Details are scant, but this marks another miraculous escape for founder Hui Ka Yan. Regardless, the fact that the creditors accepted this deal highlights how real estate has trapped policymakers. Earlier in September, Reuters reported that Evergrande had sent a letter to the Guangdong provincial government asking for accelerated approval to float subsidiary Hengda Real Estate via reverse merger. It warned of risk to China's financial stability if Evergrande failed to meet a January listing deadline, which would have triggered some 144 billion yuan in payments to backers like electronics retail giant Suning. Evergrande said the letter is fake, but the developer's situation is undeniable. 400 billion yuan of short-term debts as of June, and Evergrande's stock and bond prices fell in response to the report. Yet within a few days, Hui had managed to persuade creditors holding 80% of the obligations, including Suning's chairman Zhang Jingdong, to appear behind him during a singing ceremony in which they pledged to renounce their claim to payment and retain shares in unlisted Hengda instead. That sounds like a much worse deal, especially since the listed state-owned developer that was supposed to reverse merge with Hengda is showing signs of very cold feet. September 27th that reiterated that such a restructuring would be unprecedented. So very, very interesting stuff. I made a point to go and look for some Chinese and African news because there's a lot happening over there, and our news is flooded with COVID and Trump news, so it gets a little hard to know what else is going on. Now, a Greek court here, this was covered by two different sources. The France 24 and BBC have stories covering a Greek court ruling that neo-Nazi party the Golden Dawn guilty of acting as a criminal group. So France 24 starts us off with, a Greek court found neo-Nazi party Golden Dawn guilty of acting as a criminal organization on Wednesday in a landmark verdict in Marathon. In the Marathon five-year-long trial against the country's extreme right-wing Golden Dawn Party Wednesday, with security tight and more than 15,000 people gathering in an anti-fascist rally outside. The 68 defendants in the trial included 18 former lawmakers from the party that was founded in the 1980s as a neo-Nazi organization and rose to become Greece's third-largest party in the parliament during the country's decade-long financial crisis. If we jump over here to BBC, we get that after the trial lasting more than 5 years, the leadership of Greece's neo-Nazi party has been convicted of running a criminal organization. Big crowds gathered outside the court in Athens as the judges gave verdicts on 68 defendants. Golden Dawn secured 18 MPs in 2012 as Greece was battled by the financial crisis. The criminal inquiry into the party began with the murder of an anti-fascist musician in 2013. Leader Nicholas Michailoliakos and six colleagues were convicted of heading a criminal group. Supporter Georgos Rupaikas was found guilty of murdering an anti-racist racist musician, and 15 others were convicted of conspiracy in the case. Some 2,000 police were deployed around the Athens Capitol Court as thousands of protesters demanded long jail terms, carrying banners that read, "Fear will not win and Nazis in prison." And the photos, along with this article from the BBC, are pretty good. So if you want to check it out, that's where you can go. BBC.com. Oh boy. Well, let's keep on going. We haven't even hit the COVID news yet. Malaysia is going to stop funding national carrier if lesser hawks fail. So this is coming out of Singapore. The parent of Malaysia Airlines has warned leasing companies that state fund Khazanah will stop funding the group and force it into a winding down process if restructuring talks with lessors are unsuccessful, according to a letter seen by Reuters. Oh yeah, there's more. There's COVID news. Don't worry. The warning from Malaysia Aviation Group, the holding company for the state carrier, raises the stakes in negotiations for a financial shakeup known as Plan A. It sets out an alternative plan to divert funds to a sister airline called Firefly. So lots of financial things shaking around to try and keep things afloat out there. And yesterday we talked about some protests going on in Kyrgyzstan. Well, France 24 has a follow-up. Kyrgyzstan's Prime Minister Kubatbek Boronov resigned Tuesday after widespread unrest pushed the country's electoral body to cancel the results of the elections. Boronov, an ally of pro-Russian President Sooronbay Jeenbekov, was replaced by a nationalist politician that protesters released from jail the day before. Unrest over the vote left almost 700 hurt and one dead and appeared to be spreading Tuesday to the other parts of the country, raising concerns from Russia, which has a powerful influence in the ex-Soviet country wedged between China and Kazakhstan. Kyrgyzstan's Central Electoral Commission said that it had invalidated the election results, which saw parties close to Jeenbekov dominate results amid accusations of mass vote buying. The results sparked a tumultuous Monday night in the capital, Bishkek, with protesters seizing government buildings and freeing high-profile politicians from prison, including the former president, Almazbek Atambayev. So, very interesting. There's a 5-minute video clip kind of summing it up, too, if you go to France24.com. Of course, when we're talking about war and unrest, we can't forget the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict. This is going on between Azerbaijan and it's Azerbaijan and who's Armenia, sorry. Iran is getting in the mix, though. Iran has warned that renewed fighting between its neighbors, Azerbaijan and Armenia, could escalate into a wider regional war. President Hassan Rouhani said he hoped to restore stability to the region following days of heavy clashes over the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh enclave. The enclave is officially part of Azerbaijan, but run by Armenians. The current fighting is the worst seen in decades, and both sides have blamed each other for the violence. We must be attentive that the war between Armenia and Azerbaijan does not become a regional war. Peace is the basis of our work, and we hope to restore stability in the region in a peaceful way, he added. President Rouhani also said it was totally unacceptable for any stray shells and missiles to land on Iranian soil. His comments followed reports that shells had landed on villages in Iran, just across from its northern border with Armenia and Azerbaijan. Our priority is the security of our cities and villages. And then they have a map kind of outlining where everything is and what's happening. So if you are curious about that, you can check out the graphics. That's also at the BBC. So, we're almost there. We've got two more stories before we jump into the COVID news. There's a lot. It's crazy out there. It's like it's a worldwide pandemic or something. So, here we go. So this is from the World Socialist website. That's Whiskey Sierra, whiskeysierra.org, so WSWS.org. The latest developments in the East German city of Gera underline the sharp turn to the right by the ruling class. Last Thursday, a retired doctor and a member of the far-right racist Alternative for Germany, AfD, Reinhard Etzschort, was elected chairman of the city council in the third-largest city in the state of Thuringia. His appointment was the first time in post-war history that a far-right candidate filled such a post. Etzschort received 23 of 40 votes cast, although the AfD has just 12 seats on the city council. This means the right-wing extremist was elevated into office with the support of Germany's mainstream political parties. Etzschort is a leading representative of the Wing faction of the AfD in Thuringia, led by Bjorn Höcke Wing, and has linked to neo-Nazis and far-right terror groups. According to media reports, he took part in the Thuringia demo in Gera in June 2015. The far-right march was organized by members of the fascist German Democratic Party, NPD, and the European Action Movement, which has since dissolved. Former cadre of the core cell of the National Socialist Underground and activists of the fascist network, Combat 18, banned at the beginning of 2020, also took part in the protests. So, very troubling. The story goes on, kind of gives a history about why it's bad and what you can expect. But it's going to take more time than we have for the show today. So there you go, WSWS.org. Now, this is a fun story, hopefully kind of a buffer before we talk about COVID-19. This is from Reuters. How a Chilean raspberry scamp dodged food safety controls from China to Canada. So in January 2017, Chilean customs inspectors acted on a tip from a whistleblower. The country's prized crop of raspberry was under threat. Inspectors raided the offices of Fruity de Bosco, a little-known fruit trading company on the second floor of a tower block in downtown Santiago. The files, company data, and sales records they were seized revealed a food trading racket that spanned three continents. At its heart was a fraud centered on raspberries. Low-cost frozen berries, grown in China, were shipped to a packing plant in central Chile. Hundreds of tons of fruit were repackaged and rebranded by Fruity de Bosco as premium Chilean-grown organics and then shipped to consumers in Canadian cities, including Vancouver and Montreal, according to documents prepared by Chilean Customs as part of its investigation. The agency calculated that at least 12 million worth of mislabeled raspberries were sent to Canada between 2014 and 2016. Much of that product, the document showed, came from Harbin Gaotai Food Co. Ltd., a Chinese supplier. Canadian health authorities later linked berries from Harbin Gaotai to a 2017 norovirus outbreak in Quebec that sickened hundreds of people. Canadian authorities issued a recall on the berries coming directly to Canada from China dating back to 2016. So very interesting. Pretty wild, right? The scheme, pieced together for the first time by Reuters, lays bare the ease with which mislabeled, potentially risky products can be slipped past the world's health and customs agencies, even as authorities across the globe scramble to ensure foods entering their countries are free of a new scourge, COVID-19. Harbin Gaotai did not reply to requests for comment of this report. So, you can read more about that if you want, but international berry trafficking. Pretty wild, I think. You know, at least it's kind of interesting. Well, let's not lose steam just yet, because we got more news to go. But let's start off, let's play a song real quick. I've been talking a lot, been going a little bit wild. We're gonna play a song from Weezer. It's called The World Has Turned and Left Me Here. It's off of the Blue album, or their self-titled album.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
All right, just got to hit the right button. Oh, hey, Tobe, welcome, welcome. And hello, X1 and Ratsu. Yeah, I posted a link in com to that Barry story. It is pretty interesting, and it's a welcome diversion from the COVID news. So we're going to do a little bit of a COVID news block because, you know, there's international and domestic news about it, but we'll be a little quick, be brief with it, since I've got like 30 stories about it. So in Czech, so from Prague, new coronavirus infections in the Czech Republic reached a daily record of 4,457 on Tuesday, the health ministry said, and separate data showed the country now has the highest number of cases per 100,000 in Europe, surpassing Spain. Data published by the health ministry on Wednesday showed the rise in new cases during the previous 24 hours had exceeded the previous one-day record of 3,794 to bring the total number of cases in the country since March to 90,022. If we go out here, not only Czechoslovakia, Berlin is facing some trouble. This is coming from The Guardian. Berlin nightlife given first curfew in 70 years as COVID cases surge. So Berlin's nightlife is facing a closing time for the first time in 70 years as the party-loving German capital seeks to contain spiraling coronavirus infection rates. From Saturday, bars, restaurants, and off licenses will have to close their doors between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. as a large second wave of COVID-19 cases in the city threatens to taint Germany's image as a pandemic role model. With health authorities mainly blaming private parties and family meetups for the latest outbreak, public gatherings of more than 5 people from more than 2 households and private gatherings of more than 10 people will also be banned under new rules announced on Wednesday. Berlin has since the start of October been recording more daily new confirmed cases than it did at the peak of its first wave in late March, when testing capacity was more limited. On Tuesday, 2 of the 3 traffic lights that make up the city's coronavirus warning system switched to red after authorities recorded 44.2 new cases per 100,000 people over the past 7 days. And the chart definitely, in this article, definitely shows that things are going bad. And there is a cute picture of some soft toys sitting in an empty terrace of a restaurant accompanying the article. That's pretty cute. It's from The Guardian. And if we stick around with Guardian, Brussels! We're going to keep on going. Berlin, now Brussels. Brussels closes cafes and bars for a month. Italy is imposing mandatory masks outdoors. And Brazil is approaching 5 million confirmed COVID-19 cases on Wednesday as it nears 150,000 deaths in the second most deadly coronavirus outbreak outside the United States. So there are outbreaks all over the place. But there's news, good news, positive news on the horizon. good news on the horizon. China's experimental COVID-19 vaccine appears safe. This is from Reuters. A Chinese experimental coronavirus vaccine being developed by the Institute of Medical Biology under the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences was shown to be safe in an early-stage clinical trial. In a phase 1 trial of 191 healthy participants aged between 18 and 59, vaccination with the group's experimental shot showed no severe adverse reactions, its researchers said on Tuesday in a paper posted on MedRxiv preprint server ahead of peer review. That's Romeo X-ray India Victor. So I don't know what that is, but there you go. The most common adverse reactions reported by the trial participants were mild pain, slight fatigue and redness, itching and swelling at the injection site. The candidate also induced immune response. All the data obtained in this trial support the safety and immunogenicity of this inactivated vaccine and are encouraging with regard to further studies of its efficacy in the future. So this will be interesting. China has at least 4 experimental vaccines in the final stage of clinical trials. And if we keep in China and keep, we'll keep on going. Let's get here. Boop, boop. We're doing our COVID headlines real quick. We jump over to the U.S. COVID nurse who shared patient's tragic last words shocked by U.S. inaction. So in a country where access to affordable health care is not guaranteed, New York City nurse Derek Smith struck a nerve across the U.S. after sharing the last words of a COVID-19 patient who minutes before being intubated asked, "Who's going to pay for it?" This Facebook post went viral 6 months ago when cases in the city were surging and the streets echoed with the constant sound of ambulance sirens. Today, Smith is shocked about how little the U.S. has done to address healthcare costs during a global pandemic. part because he has seen COVID-19 patients fearful of the eventual price tag for care leave his hospital against doctors' advice. Smith told The Guardian the inaction was probably the most upsetting part about it. I don't know another critical healthcare event that would take place that would necessitate instituting some sort of measure to universalize access to healthcare. So it's very sad. There's a link to the post, which is very sad. Basically goes to say that, you know, here he goes. What did it say? Last words I'll never forget. The response my patient gasped out between labor breaths to me and my team after we explained that he needed to be intubated, placed on a ventilator. We then called... Oh, who's going to pay for it? Yeah. And then they called his wife to have him speak to her for what was likely his last opportunity, as many patients don't recover after they're intubated. It's really sad. It's a sad thing. But don't feel too, you know... We can be sad, but don't worry. Doctors are dying too. From The Guardian, Texas doctor, 28, dies of COVID. She wore the same mask for weeks, if not months. It took Carrie Wanamaker several days to connect the face she saw on GoFundMe with a young woman she had met a few years before. According to the fundraising site, Adeline Fagan, a 28-year-old resident OBGYN, had developed a debilitating case of COVID-19 and was on a ventilator in Houston. Scrolling through her phone, Wanamaker found the picture she took of Fagan in 2018, showing the fourth-year medical student at her side in the delivery room, beaming at Wanamaker's pink, crying, minutes-old daughter. Fagan supported Wanamaker's leg through the birth because the epidural paralyzed her below the waist, and they joked and laughed since Wanamaker felt loopy from the anesthesia. So they talk about her delivery. Among the deceased healthcare workers who have so far been profiled in depth by the Lost on the Frontline team, about a dozen nationwide, including Fagan, were under the age of 30. The median age of death from COVID for medical staff is 57, compared to 78 in the general population. So it's... I've been getting crazy lag also. So pretty intense. But life is good. Let's go ahead and... also, the CDC, and I'll just say it now, I don't know if we can believe that the CDC and all of anything that's related to the U.S. government seems to be heavily influenced by the Trump camp. So it's pretty intense. And I've been in such rush to read news, I didn't even mention the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobes coming up in just about 3 minutes. So if you're here right now, you might as well stay. Show's super fun. Lots of adventure. Dudes, mantises sometimes. There's usually a baby that gets the bass dropped. It's amazing. Definitely stay tuned for that. Well, let's see. What's non-COVID news? I got way too many stories. I can talk about almost anything. But you know what that means? That means it's...
Is it time for tech news?
Oh, yep.
Is it time for tech news?
That's right. It's time to talk a little bit about some tech news because... This is kind. There's just a couple stories. These are both from Reuters. Mercenary hacker group runs rampant in Middle East. So this is coming from Washington. Saudi diplomats, Sikh separatists, and Indian business executives have been among those targeted by a group of hired hackers, according to research published on Wednesday by software firm BlackBerry Corp. The report here on the group, and the here is at blackberry.com, on the group, known publicly as Bahamut, the name assigned to the mythical sea monster Erebor, highlights how cybersecurity researchers are increasingly finding evidence of mercenaries online. BlackBerry's Vice President of Research, Eric Millam, said the diversity of Bahamut's activities was such that he assumed it was working for a range of different clients. There's too many different things going on across too many different ranges and too many different verticals that it would be a single state, Millam said ahead of the report's release. In June, Reuters reported on how obscure Indian IT firm called Beltroll X offered its hacking services to help clients spy on more than 10,000 email accounts over 7 years, including targeting prominent American investors. It's pretty wild, right? Well, don't worry. The next part... U.S. Supreme Court divided over Google bid to end Oracle copyright suit. So the U.S. Supreme Court appeared divided on Wednesday as it considered whether to protect Alphabet Inc.'s Google from a long-running lawsuit by Oracle Corp. accusing it of infringing Oracle's copyrights to build the Android operating system that runs most of the world's smartphones. The short-handed court, down one justice following the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg last month, heard oral arguments in Google's appeal of a lower court ruling reviving the lawsuit in which Oracle had sought at least $8 billion in damages. Some of the eight justices expressed concern that Google simply copied Oracle's software code instead of innovating and creating its own for mobile devices. So, pretty wild. But, you know, we're out of time. Stick around for the dude. I'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. And every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 19...